Hi, this is Tim Huckabee from Internology, and on behalf of Bytes by MSDN, I'm excited to have Nishant Gattari here today.
Yeah, thank you.
Hey, Nishant, thanks for coming. Last year, you had the most popular session at MIX. This year, chances are, you have the most popular session again.
Yep.
It's a crazy session. Do you mind, for those who haven't seen it, can you tell us about it?
So I have to say, like last year, it turned out I got this weird score. I got like a really good score, right?
Like perfect.
Yeah, and it was a complete fluke, and I attribute it to the fact that I put up pictures of my dog last year. Like it was just a part of, you know, I was making a point about something. So of course this year, what do I do? Since I learned that, I had like 9 pictures of my dog in the session that I just delivered. So anyway, the session last year, what I did was it was a very real exploration of how you design things, right? So we read about this stuff in textbooks and in school and stuff, and then you get into the real world and you go.
But let me jump in. In all honesty, you know, for coming from a software development background, we don't really learn it in school. You learn it in school, which I think is important distinction in design and software development.
Well, I have a computer science background, right? And so I got the UX background too. But basically, my point is, you read a lot of textbooks, and they teach you about, you know, different disciplines and sub-disciplines in computer science and user experience. They teach you about different processes, right? So we've come up with all sorts of complicated processes to build software, right? But the fact of the matter is, if we want to be true, honest about it, is we build way more crappy software than good software, right?
It's true.
And whenever we build good software, it's usually it's a fluke.
Arguable.
It's arguable that you actually planned it.
Yeah.
So last year what I did, and this is just, you know, I'm a practicing designer too, and so we had redesigned a website, and I thought it would be kind of cool just to go through step by step how we did it. And I'm talking brutally honest step by step, right? I showed all my prototypes, I showed, you know, where the process got screwed up, I showed everything, right? I shared, and it was clearly very, you know, people liked it. They liked the honesty of the situation, because I think honest case studies offer a lot. In terms of people can learn a lot from them.
I totally agree.
Right? So this year I thought, for the last year I've been reading a bunch of stuff and I've had all these thoughts simmering. I'm a pretty opinionated guy. So I thought maybe we could do something that's pretty similar. Clearly that recipe worked. So this year what I did was we had redesigned the website again. So we used that as a case study, and we won a bunch of awards from this redesign. So the redesign worked for us, right? So I could at least hold it up, you know, honorably and say, hey, this thing worked, right? Now, let's zoom in on a few parts of that nobody else would dare to zoom into, and let's explore what's different about the process in the real world. So my session was titled The Elephant in the Room, and the whole point of the session was, and as I had a slide on this, was to poach all these elephants, which is usually not a good thing in the real world, but in the session
bad
it was
metaphor,
a good thing.
But
yeah, bad metaphor. And so we sort of went through, like, I'll give you an example of something that I addressed. So there's this notion that design is subjective, right? And I provide this anecdote how, when you start dating someone, you're very curious about each other, right? You want to know what each other.
Well, I don't know. It was so long ago. I've been married for 21 years, but okay.
So I've been married 2 years. And so when my wife and I started dating, we were, you know, learning about each other, what we liked, and, you know, favorite food and favorite drink and favorite restaurant. Now, in my experience, when you get to the topic of music, it's a very contentious topic. It's almost like religion and politics, right?
Like computer languages.
Absolutely. And with me, and I was a certified, like, you know, music snob, because I've been playing the guitar for a couple of decades. So, of course, I was self entitled, right? I can judge music better than other people. So I was that obnoxious guy when someone said, oh, I heard this really awesome artist. I'd be that annoying guy. I'd be like,
whatever.
Whatever. That's not good, right? Like, and it's not like I'm reformed or anything, but... So when my wife came up to me and said, oh, I listen to Jay-Z and Usher and Beyonce.
I knew you were going here.
And Celine Dion, right? And I'm coming from like a Rush, like, you know, Thelonious Monk background. I was just like, that's preposterous. Like, no, like...
It's insulting.
Yeah, it's completely insulting, and no love of mine will subscribe to such heathen music, right? And she's much smarter than I am. Way, 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 way smarter. So she had a very simple argument. She's like, look, you're being a... jackass, but
beep.
yeah, I didn't know if I could. If that's a swear word or not. But she was like, "Look, people choose music in different ways, And you could even argue that music selects you. So for me, what was important is like the complexity of the music. So when I'm listening to something, I'm zoning in on, you know, the bass line, or I'm zoning into the lead guitar or whatever, right? That's how I listen to music. When she listens to music, it's all about the beat. It's about the dancing, right? She's a dancer. So she thinks of...
More holistic. Yeah.
It's holistic. It's about the melodies. And so that's truly subjective, right? How we pick music is truly subjective. And, you know, when I said music sort of picks us, I use that metaphor because, you know, we have likes and dislikes. We're unique people, right? Ultimately, music appeals to us based on our experiences. Sometimes it evokes memories that we've had. Sometimes a friend recommended it. So there are all these different reasons. But then we take that and we bring it into our software world and we say design is subjective. And I completely disagree, right? Because if you ask a good designer if design is subjective, they'll say, no, absolutely not. It's objective, much like a line of code, right? And that's what a programmer will tell you. But we use these arguments all the time. So to me, that's an elephant in the room. Because as designers, we've had difficulty to combat those kind of problems, right? So I, you know, in my session, I provided evidence of, you know, why design is objective, for instance, right? And I was referencing this book by Betty Edwards, where she talks about, she's basically an art teacher, and she talks about color. And imagine there's a chair sitting somewhere in the room. So she has her class of art students come in, and she tells them to draw the chair. So a bunch of people are able to represent the chair exactly as it's there from that angle, right, from that perspective. A bunch of people can't draw it, and they always say, oh, I can't draw, right? But what's really happening is you have a brain process called size constancy that is always overriding what your eyes see, right? So what your brain sees and what your eyes see are completely different things. And we've evolved these brain processes. So you could argue from that perspective that the unique thing about an artist, and by extension a designer, is that they have the learned ability to represent the world as it is. And I would go further than that and say to actually represent it back as people expect to see it, right? And so basically I provide these kind of arguments, and at the end of the day, these things are my opinions, and I've written about it and stuff.
I think it's clear why you are one of the most popular speakers, if not the most popular.
Flattery will get you everywhere.
And you own, before I let you go,
yeah.
You and your team own the Mix Online thing.
Yeah.
You know, clearly we can watch your session there. Can you just, before I let you go, talk about that, what the resources we have on Mix Online and how it's this dynamic living thing that goes year-round, year-in, year-out?
Sure. So under Mix brand, there are two things. There's a conference website, which is live.visitmix.com, and every year we update that for that particular conference. You can get session schedules and stuff. Then there's a separate site called videos.visitmix.com, and you can find every session that we've ever had. We put it up there so people can go watch the videos. And then we have visitmix.com, which is the site my team runs. And the way we like to think about Mix is we have a 72-hour conversation in Vegas, and then we have a 52-and-a-quarter-day conversation offline. So we basically publish expert articles on our site from contributors. We build software and open source it so people can learn. So we also speak at a lot of events and sponsor a lot of events and stuff. So basically, if you go to visitmix.com, you can find all these sites.
Outstanding. Awesome. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
And thank you guys for watching.